It was very stressful. I thought that I was going to have my life, the way I look after my family, the things I do day to day. I've been doing this for 12 years. It was literally about to be turned over and I thought I was going to lose it all.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's Single Track World podcast. I'm Hannah, and today, after a little bit of a wait, I am joined by Dan Stanton from the now Stanton Bicycles. Hello, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
So we've been awaiting this podcast for a little bit because you've been, well, turning Stanton Bikes into Stanton Bicycles, which has been quite a process. So for those listening, before we get into it, I think it's worth saying that, like a lot of bike companies, Stanton has been the product of, you know, committed friends and family. And Dan's former investor was a long-term friend. So as we go through this story and pick it apart, it can be quite personally difficult. And we also have to be a little bit legally careful, because where Dan and Stanton Bicycles is today is a result of a legal process. So there's some stuff that we might not get into. And if Dan says, oh, I better not talk about that, then it's because we don't want to get on the wrong side of any solicitors. And there has been this legal process. He's not trying to be deliberately like evasive or anything like that. But we have talked, like, it's been difficult to get to this point at a personal level and at a legal level. And we don't want to undo any of that. So so thank you, Dan, for getting your house in order and ducks in a row to be with us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So I think we should go back to where we were last time I saw Dan, which was back in early 2019. And I went to your HQ to sort of help build my test bike. I'm not sure I helped that much, but it was certainly fun to see. And I guess at that stage, you were bringing production of bikes into the UK. You had just bought what I keep calling the tube chopper. What's its proper name, that machine?
I think at that point in time, it was the Marchetti that we were looking at, and we were starting to use.
Marchetti.
Yeah. But
So you just had that delivered, and you were literally, as I arrived, sticking the business plan to the wall, which had the vision of where you were going to go for the next 10 years and how you were going to make production in the UK efficient and, like, not a boutique kind of shed builder thing, but an actual, like, industrial scale production. And so we did a long chat then about that, and people can go back and watch the video, because you thought that there was a better way of making bikes than making them abroad in the kind of guesstimate quantity and then shipping them over here. So does that accurately kind of spell out what you were aiming to do?
Yeah, we were hitting pretty reasonable numbers, and the aim was to try and get close to the value that we could produce frames for in Asia, here in the UK, because we had the quantity. So it was all about creating a process that we could produce that level of frames efficiently enough that it would be cost effective to do so. So yeah, that was the aim. And did we get there? To a degree, yeah, we did. Yeah, and we really, because of all the twists and turns that happened through Brexit and COVID and all the subsequent lockdowns and the relationship between China and Taiwan and shipping from abroad, you know, yeah, we ended up actually finding a way to be able to produce in mass using CNC machines. So we ended up creating jigs where you can lay tubes in and then basically cut and process. So there isn't the need for, like the way we were looking at doing it originally was to process using the Ajax and the Marchetti and cutting and processing everything manually just to get us going. And we know that in Asia they use wire eroders, you know, so the closest thing that we could really get to here in that period of time was using CNC machines. So we went down that route.
Right. So you think it's still a plausible and possible business model then?
Yeah, we're still carrying on with it now. Whether it becomes as large as relative to how many frames we sell, but principally getting the price to a reasonable manufacturing cost where we can sell into a market at a reasonable price. You know, we've done that, and we're still able to carry on doing that even as Stanton Bicycles moving forward, because the CNCing is done by Lincoln Jigs over in Lincoln. You know, the tubes are all formed in Birmingham, so they're shipped to there, and then any CNC parts for the frames can be done by Lincoln Jigs. And yeah, so it's a roundabout way, but principally it's achieved and it can carry on. And we did have welders in-house, but the idea now, at the moment especially, is to have people that have worked for us to come in and do part work per piece, per frame.
Cool. Well, so we will get to where we are now, I guess. So it sounds like the basic principle of you can manufacture in the UK and be efficient and competitive still stands, but that you've learnt some things along the
That's
way.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And had some real curveballs that definitely weren't in the business plan thrown at you. So I guess I saw this Marchetti machine, and you're saying that ultimately you didn't end up with a process that's going to use that.
No,
it was a massive outlay, wasn't it?
It was about $6,000. Probably used it a handful of times. Really, we ended up getting something that, because that was okay for doing main tubes, but it couldn't do the stays anyway. So we were looking at getting something else to do in stays anyway. But really, we figured out that we never actually got into a position where it was needed, because we'd have the once we got the Ajax, we were able to do all the main tubes on the Ajax and the rear ends on the Ajax, and we ended up cutting. We did a load of UK stuff in house to get us going. We found that we were small mistakes, such as small labour mistakes. So like greasing the angled vise meant that the vibrations from the machine caused the vise to slip ever so slightly. And then all the cuts for the stays was incrementally off angle. And that happened over a large batch of seat stays. And then we couldn't get any more of them for 3 months. It just, it didn't. So what we ended up doing was mitigating risk by removing the fact of having somebody there doing that process. We just literally now put them in a CNC machine and process them in a CNC machine.
So the Ajax that you refer to, Ajax is a CNC machine?
No, sorry, that's
what you're
that,
saying? No?
That's a milling machine, but you can turn the head on it and you can cut. So So yeah, we were using that as the tube cutter for a while, and then basically as things started to, when COVID hit, staff started to leave. One of the chaps was in his 60s, and he his mother was in her 90s, and when COVID hit, he got quite worried and he left, and he was the main fabricator. And so this then meant that we had to come up with another process, and obviously during COVID you couldn't employ. So we ended up then, like I say, working with Lincoln Jigs and developing this way of being able to process tubing in CNC machines.
Right.
So that just warrants, you know, Tim, the owner, or Tom, his son, to stand at the machine every time it's finished its process, just put a fresh tube in and lift the other ones up the stack. So it mitigates quite a proportion of risk. So yeah, it's not all in-house, and that would be an aim long-term, or was an aim long-term. Whether it's still an aim now, I'm unsure, to be quite frank. I quite like the idea of the cost being set, because when you employ people, obviously the cost of people's wages is in relation to how much product. That's a static outgoing, but the value of input, like cash coming in, is in relation to the amount of output that you're getting out of the product. So if you can not have it that way and have the price per piece, then you've got much more financial control over the production. At one point, we were throwing out, we were doing 15 to 20 frames a week, you know, which is pretty efficient. And that was only with one welder through that process. So it became a cost-effective affair for sure. But as obviously we've just gone through this administration process and come out the other side, it then, you know, we're not selling the same volume. So then to spend 37,000 or 42,000 on a welder per year doesn't seem very cost effective if we're not getting that level of stock, level of purchasing coming through. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you need that economy of scale to work out. But I guess it sounds like then you've done a whole business process re-engineering. From where you originally thought you were going to be doing to I guess the start of the administration process, which would for any company be a challenge to look at the business process and then obviously the staff that goes with that, because if you're changing how you do things, you're also changing who you need to do things. But on top of that, you had COVID to make that, to force some of that, but also to complicate some of that.
For sure.
And we had Brexit.
Yeah.
And Brexit and COVID kind of came in this double whammy of supply chain issues. Anyway, you couldn't ship stuff out, but you also couldn't get stuff in.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the impact of that? I guess I think before COVID, you, Stanton, have been having issues trying to keep up with demand, which you then kind of got back on top of, but then had COVID as well. So, do you want to sort of talk around?
Yeah, so while we were working out, while we were processing in-house, and like I say, these small labour mistakes, such as greasing the vise, they obviously have massive impact on lead times for customers, because all of a sudden you can't get tubing in. You know, it's an area in a situation where you can't get tubing for 3 months, so now you've got a back order list that's growing. You know, you're trying to warn people, explain the situation, but then other circumstances start to come in and it becomes very difficult for one, I guess, towards the end of it, for people to believe you, because how many mitigating circumstances are people going to accept, you know, how many different, So that obviously caused us little problems like that caused a problem. Even in paint, you know, why was it that when we sent some frames off to ED, we'd get batches come back real, real clean, you know, and then other batches would have like rust water running out of them, and the amount of extra process that needed doing. And it was that the Pym and Wildsmith, the dippers, they're dipping digger buckets and all sorts of things like that, you know. So the fluid isn't always very clean. So the product that you get back from them can sometimes need a lot more labour invested into sorting it out before it goes through the paint shop. So you're then working with them in the background to get that sorted out. But that then adds labour, obviously. And that small things, like things that don't come through until later on in the process. So it looks like the surface is all fine, but then you pass it through paint and there's pinhole in. you know, and you try and then you have to flat it all back and trying to figure out why that one frame is getting this reaction. It could be something that's inside the tube that's coming from the dipping process, like a chemical that you can't get back out. So there's all this, these sorts of things that are that we're figuring out because it's a fresh company. You know, we're working out all of these processes and they cause delays. And then, bam, everyone had geared down anyway for Brexit, which was difficult in relation to components and parts that were purchasing less because the whole industry works on like a year cycle. So you're looking at ordering things for next year all the time. So people have predicted in relation to the way the economy had gone that things, you know, sales would be down. And then obviously COVID hits, there's lockdowns all over the place. China's locking down, Taiwan's locking down, shipments are locking down. You just literally can't get stuff over to you. You know, you can't, then we've got lockdowns, we can't get stuff out. You know, some staff are really anxious about the virus because of people in the family. So they're then not wanting to come to work anymore or decide to leave. It just literally span it all into disarray. But I think really overarchingly, we was very reactive to all those situations. And actually what we've got now from it all is the same sort of offering on the exterior to the customer, but with a very leaned out price per part situation in the background to make it all far more financially manageable, you know, because it's more predictable, I guess. That's the point.
And I guess that when I talk to people about why they build in Taiwan instead of building in the UK or wherever else, one of the big things is always that it's all streamlined and sorted in Taiwan. You go to the front end of the process and go, here, build me this. And they might say, well, we've built something like this before and we suggest you tweak this or that. You get that upfront kind of advice. And then it goes through the process and out the other end comes a bike, because that's all those people are doing all day, every day, is welding frames and welding bike frames. So they have all that specialist knowledge, all streamlined in one place. And if you try and replicate that process in the UK, you end up either trying to do what you did, which was bring it all in-house, or do what you're doing now, which is use lots of different people to do the different bits of the process. But then you need to manage them all and find out, make sure that they all connect together. And if there's a problem, you've then got to track back through it. And it's got to be tracked through a number of different places because it's not the one-stop shop that you get in Taiwan. And so, this totally echoes what I've heard other people saying, is that it's more difficult to make it happen in the UK. And you've kind of been through that process of the difficulties and discovering those difficulties.
Yeah. I think one is that the labour cost is far less, you know, in Asia. Streamlining processes and all those sorts of things, 100%. Yeah, definitely. That's literally, if I'm ordering 1,000 frames a year, I'm not the only person. I'm one month's work for them, you know, if that. You know, they're literally geared up and set up that way. We intended to, not necessarily have anything running as grand as that sort of scenario, but to have small team of 5-6 people in per department would have been an ideal, really. What we ended up with was 1 to 2 people per department, and it being very difficult for it to be predictable because, one, the economy and what was happening on a sociological scale was, you know, blown up all over the place, and then that then meant that there was, you know, just a disruption internally. But then also there's the fact that that we're in a growing state. We're a growing company. We're looking to turn everything that we're putting into the company into something else that can generate more profit, more growth in the company. And then all of a sudden, if that growth just drops off, if the funds that supply that growth drops off, then you caught the fish out of water as the tides recede. You're flapping on the beach, you know. I'm 42 now, especially just in business, especially. I've never experienced anything economically like we have over the last 2 years, you know. So I wouldn't have ever, I didn't live in a frame of mind where those sorts of things happened. And it was bumping into some older people that had run businesses, and they said to me, you know, well, things like this happened in the 90s, early 2000s, not as dramatic, but these are the things that you need to do and put in place. And it's quite interesting, really. You know, we should have geared staffing down, really, but they were as but it became this thing about leaning out processes. But really, to my mind, if you've only got one or two people per department, then you need to let some people go and other people bridge gaps while you just haven't got that level of turnover happening. But, you know, I wasn't the only person making choices and decisions.
And it's difficult to make those choices when you're working with people you like and you're trying to invest in the company and you're trying to, like, keep those skills there. And some of the skills that you have people employed on or had people employed on are difficult to get skills. There aren't a whole bunch of people with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Okay, so I think that possibly sets the scene as to how difficult it was to try and realise that vision that you were sticking on the wall last time I saw you. And I guess it was notable to me, as somebody that came from outside of the bike industry, that was one of the first times I'd really seen a business plan in the bike industry, that somebody had really sort of sat down and gone, I'm here. I want to get there, and these are the things I'm going to do on the way. Because a lot of the time it feels like the bike industry is just, like, not really as a business. And I guess we're seeing the fruits of that now in the last couple of years, that the businesses that are business-like having to make difficult choices.
Yeah.
So, you had this plan and there were lots of obstacles in the way, most of which you probably couldn't have foreseen. Like, certainly these socioeconomic stuff and COVID, you couldn't have foreseen. You probably knew that there were going to be hiccups along the way with the process, but you didn't know where you were going to end up. So you reach a point where you've got a difference of opinion with your funder and your friend about how to take the business forward and how to get from this difficult position that you were in to where you should go next, which results in the administration process, which was obviously immensely stressful for you. And we ran that story of Stanton going into administration, and there was this kind of outpouring of support from people inevitably saying, oh no, I never got around to buying that Stanton frame, which is like, yes, if you could just, that would be good. I guess from your perspective, how did that feel like for you to live through? What was that like?
It was really stressful. You know, I didn't want the company to go into administration. I had a different plan. You know, created a different action plan, and this is where it gets a bit sticky. I created a different action plan. I didn't really want to go down that direction at all. But effectively, that's the way it was pulled. It was very stressful. I thought that I was going to have my the way I look after my family, the things I do day to day. I've been doing this for 12 years. It was literally about to be turned over, and I thought I was going to lose it all. You know, I didn't have the money personally to be able to buy the company out of administration or anything like that. So it was about, it's like anything, you know, things only end or come to an end when you let them come to an end. I think you have to really make a choice. If you give up at any point, then and some things become some stresses are so stressful. Some things really grind you, and it's very hard for you to not see a direction or a way that you can continue something. And I'd say with a lot of support, my wife was lovely, good friends around me, you know, solid faith. Things started to fall into place. The right people came around me, advising me correctly. You know, I never let go of my direction or my dream or my aim. I carried on pushing towards it, regardless of how unlikely it felt. Some days it was very hard to get up in the morning and put it together that day and make those meetings and see if I, especially as there were a lot of closed doors, you know, but principally, yeah, it was hard. But so I'll tell you what, okay, so this is one thing that when people ask me, how are you coping? How are you doing this? I'd say I don't understand it fully, but I understand that this is going to sound a bit daft or ethereal, whatever. A caterpillar crawls across the ground, okay, and all it knows is the floor, and it's an immediate touch sense, that's it. And then one day it starts to, chrysalis, metamorphosis, and it literally liquidates to the point that its ass becomes its face, yeah, and it bursts out of what it was and transcends all of its previous limitations, okay, but in its process, when it was there going through this metamorphosis, it must have felt like it was dying. I didn't know what was coming, you know, and I guess that was where I was. I said, I feel like, you know, everything around me is liquidating, but I know that if I carry on just working at it, it will somehow come to fruition, that it will carry on. The dream will carry on in some way. Just got to keep pushing, keep driving, you know? So that's intimately the truth about how it felt to go through that process.
You should do all of that again in a French accent and then say something about seagulls following the trawler. that's that French footballer, isn't it?
So
obviously then that's like incredibly stressful to go through, and we'll come to where you end up as the beautiful butterfly in the end. together with the very hungry caterpillar route. But during that time, understandably, and perhaps slightly burned, as you said, you alluded to before, how long will people trust you for? And certainly the consumers in the bike industry watched the unfolding of sick bicycles, and there were people that didn't get what they paid for and that kind of thing. So I think people are more sceptical, more nervous than they maybe were a few years back. Who lost out in that process? Like, were there people that went unpaid?
Well, thankfully, we'd done loads and loads of work on clearing all the backlog and everything. So there was very, very few exposed. When the administration company was in, we were trying to encourage them, I think I can say this, we were trying to encourage them to let go of the customer stock that was in the building. But obviously, because it then became Stanton Bikes Limited in administration, owned by the administration company, it then meant that the product that was all in the building were then assets of the new company, their company. Mm-hmm. So they were then making it very difficult to get that stuff out the door. But So, like I said, there's only a small amount of people exposed. And so when I took the company on, I then went through those invoices, went through those communications with those customers and settled those issues with them, you know. So there's nobody, right, apart from, I'll tell you, there's a friend called John of mine who I still need to sort some bits out for a build kit. And that's it, really. That is it, line drawn.
So customers, all but your mate, are sorted. Yeah. And then, and what about suppliers, like other suppliers are in the industry.
So there was a small amount of exposure for Lincoln Jigs, the company that I work for, CNC Parts, but it was like, I think it's 3 or 4 grand. And I'm just going to pay them that as I go along, you know, going forward.
And they're still working with you now, so they presumably don't hold it against you.
No, it's just that it wasn't, it wasn't costly. When the because they'd made some parts for us, but when the administration company took control, they didn't necessarily know what to do with those parts. So they then didn't want those parts, so then they didn't want to pay for those parts. So then there's the exposure there. Mm-hmm. My friend Yang over in Asia, he's been exposed. His stuff was basically we're on a 3-month lead, and he ended up when the administration company took control. Although he had really forgot what it's called now. It's basically this piece of paper that means that it's still his stock. And so it then created this contention between the administration company and Yang. Effectively, his stuff was all part of the whole the asset list. It just became part of the asset list, and he wasn't able to get that stock out of the company, and he was trying his best to get it out of the company. And I was, you know, trying within the legal parameters that I was restricted within under the administration, I was also trying to get him, you know, sorted out. So what's happening is he's still supplying me, we're still working together, and I'm basically paying what he was exposed per what he's exposed, I'm paying him down per frame that I buy going forward. So really, he's absolutely fine. He's happy with the situation, and like I say, we're working together, and we've got new stuff coming over, and no dramas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then TNT was exposed, and TNT is FedEx, and you know, I called up Zafar afterwards, and we're back on contract with FedEx TNT. So there's no, you know, that's it really. Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of like the people who said, ah, this is just a Phoenix company and it's just a convenient way to deal with, this was the plan all along kind of thing. That's not the case. It was a set of circumstances that built up, and then this was the resolution, and out the other side of it, you're managing to continue the relationships with those people that you were working with before, which would suggest that they don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, exactly. The only person that was the only person that lost out was the person that called the administration in, and that was the other director, other shareholder, who was the lead investor, and that was a decision that you know, that I didn't want to go down. But we were very, very stock rich, you know, because we literally had two years worth of product arrive at the end of 2021 into 2022.
Right,
we were hitting great numbers through that period, like turnover wise, everything was all squared up, all payments for everything was all met. We were starting to bank; it was great. And then the war was announced in Ukraine. All the cost, you know, oil, fuel hikes, energy hikes, all that jazz started kicking off. And before you know it, sales dipped.
Yeah,
and that's where we ended up with that. So yes,
and indeed, you might be seen to be the canary for the bike industry, because that position is what lots of bike companies are finding themselves in now, and we're seeing in the quarter one results this year that are significantly down for a great many big companies.
Yeah.
So it seems like maybe it took a bit longer to hit, but yeah, it's not like you're alone in those circumstances.
No. I've spoken to some friends who are, you know, in the industry, and they're saying especially UK sales are really, really down. You know, we're selling really, really well into America, and I did have plans, and I still have plans now. I think can revive those plans to set up some distribution over in America. I think it'd be a good idea. I've got I'm quite close friends with I've become close friends with Steve from Hardtail Party. And I'm going to going to go over and say hello and have a chat and speak to a couple of other people, some customers as well over in America looking to help us out.
I guess then we have the rescue, the rejuvenation, whatever you want to call it. So do you want to talk about your new investor and how that came about, and who that is?
Yeah, so I don't actually have an investor as such. I have nobody who's invested in the company at all. The way I was able to buy the company, we had numerous people interested. Well, some, they say numerous. We had a few people interested. They tended to be, I don't really know the language, but somebody who is in merger and acquisitions and works in that industry for a big oligarch. They were people that tended to be interested in the company. I had no concept really about the cycle industry or the brand as such, but were looking for a way to be able to get into the UK market for some way, reason or another, in some way, shape or form. One company was looking at trying to, talking to me about merging with a German electric company. And then I saw the, I saw the electric company that they were talking about. And it was literally, I said, I've got to be totally honest with you. I could organize that brand and that those products for you from China. You could give me a couple of weeks and I could sort that out for you. It's a very, very different situation to what we've got going on here. And I don't think the two really gel together. So there was that, and you know, so there was that sort of, and then there was this thing that I was, if I've designed everything and I'm going to design everything going forward, then really, can you separate the company from me? You know, because do I want to just be an employee and then, and have somebody take the company in a direction that I just sit on a salary for? Or do I actually want to carry on manifesting, you know, dreams that I hold myself? And really that's...
With your name on it as well.
Yeah, and I've got young kids. I've got a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old, young boys, and I want them to do it. I want them to feel like it's something that's that drives and gives them purpose day to day. You know, obviously they might not. They might want to do something different, but right now that's a nice positive dream to hold as a dad. So the two things couldn't really be separated. One person that that popped up that was a great help through the whole thing was Dave Loughran, who was a previous owner of Planet X and On One.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, we talked about going into business together and things like this. And, you know, we soon realized that although we make good friends and we can make good business decisions and work together in that regard, I think working together in an ownership gave a bit of a loggerhead feeling because we're both quite driven people. So we decided that we wouldn't go into business together, and I actually found that quite difficult because I thought that at one point there was we had a deal on the table that was very favourable to myself and was quite relatively cost effective for him, and I thought that this is, you know, it was a definite goer, and we were pretty much signed all the paperwork to do it, and then he pulled out and said that he didn't feel it was going to be that financially viable for him. And he's got to take kind of the emotion out of it and look at it from a pragmatic stance. And I accepted that with gritted teeth. And then the administration company started the process of passing it through John Pye, which is the auctioneer's house. They were looking at doing that, and the auctioneer came in and gave a value. And then I just espoused a value that I think that everything was worth to the administrator and said, "This, I'll do my best to try and get this value together." They agreed that value, and then I went away and spoke to Dave and said, "Look, I could sell you all of the stock that we have in the building. You know, you can get rid of that. You know how to get rid of that if push came to shove. You know, it's a good return on your investment. Would you be willing to pay X amount for all the stock?" And he said yes, and so he transferred me the cash, and I used that cash to buy the whole company, and then. Once all that paperwork had gone through, I then organised for a couple of vans and put all of that stock into a van and sent it up to Dave. So, you know, so now...
So you bought the whole thing and then gave him the stock to cover it. So that's his collateral.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So there's no investment.
But out of it, you got the name of the company.
Yeah, I got my name. I got my workshop and tooling, you know, and I got my paint shop, you know, so I'm able to carry on. Effectively.
So now anyone listening to this is going to be saying, is there about to be a bunch of Stanton bikes on Planet X's website?
So he doesn't
he's got all your frames.
Yeah, no, he doesn't run our own Planet X anymore. He doesn't run our own it anymore.
Okay, well, eBay then.
He might I mean, I trust him well enough that he won't do that, and that he'll give me the option and the opportunity to sell down all that stock before
right, so before at the moment you're selling that.
Yeah, so I'm buying that stock. I'm going up to Callum Island and loading my van with stock, bringing that down, passing it through my through the finishing shop and sending it out to customers. And so the future, yeah, I guess, looks like we're still working with Yang, still doing titanium over in Taiwan, still getting parts sent over from my mate Frey in Taiwan, still finishing all the titanium in house, and then also going downstairs to the workshop, cutting new prototypes, riding fresh prototypes, and then when it comes to production, we send off the drawings, or I'll go over to Lincoln, have a sit down with Tim and Tom, run through setting up to cut the tubing and so on, and then bring that over back to the unit, either have Rob the welder, my previous welder, come in and weld them up, or Ollie, who used to work for me, or send them down to Pat at Lincoln Jigs, who's done Limit Fabrications. You know, he's welded up quite a few bits for us. So yeah, that's the future of it, really. That's what we'll be going doing right for. And then how big that gets, all this, I'm I'd say a bit more reserved, because I can't tell you what the direction that everything is going globally, you know. And so to have, before I could have, it's like if you've only known growth, you've only understood things with growth, you can be have great aspiration and kind of think that you're going to be able to drive constantly towards those things. But when, you know, when things are out of your control, turn things over, it becomes hard for you to manifest that in full. And so I don't know what the direction, I don't know the greater picture, let's say. I'd like to go up and set some distribution up in America, and I'd like to have a nice workshop where I'm working on prototypes and developing new products and just enjoying running a bike company, designing and making bikes. And just I'd rather now, as I understand it, have price per part manufacture, still as much done in the UK as possible, a smaller company that I feel I have more control over than going, than having loads of staff and relying on and the management of staff and all that sort of stuff. Just I'd much rather focus my time and attention into product and enjoying making product. That's the truth.
Wow. And you've had the experience on both sides now, so you don't need to look at the look at the grass on the other side and wonder if it's greener. You've tasted it.
Yeah.
So you're not sure then exactly what the future's going to look like, but for clarity, what can people buy at the moment and where would it come from?
So obviously we're still producing titanium frames, we're still having titanium frames made in Asia, shipping those in, still designing all the products. We're still going to be doing UK made frames, probably smaller runs, still the aim of working with YouTubers or people that want small batches of frames making, or you know, just small runs of things, and then using the paint shop as well create batches, fresh paint batches of say Lagoon frames and you know and so on. Yeah, and then just finding time to carry on working on fresh designs like the Sherpa FS. You know, that's something I want to carry on picking back up. Single speed dropouts, man, that's a big, there's so much call for that. And it's just a project that I got the majority of the way through. And then with the administration, everything just obviously shelved it. And as soon as I picked back up on the customer emails, I'm doing all the customer emails myself as well. I think I enjoy that as well. I like talking to customers, seeing the bikes they've made. You know, it brings that kind of closeness back to it.
So what's Dave got in his shed then, that I might buy? If I come to you, I buy something. What is it that Dave's got in his shed? Is it frames?
Yeah, just bike frames. Just all the bike frames.
Hardtails and full sussers?
Mainly just hardtails. A load of front ends, titanium front ends. But mainly just hardtails, steel. 4130 hardtails and titanium hardtails. The titanium stuff that belonged to Yang that I'm now paying down.
Right.
Yeah. Which really I just wanted to give back to Yang. That's what I was looking to do. And Yang was up for that.
So if I come to you and I want to buy a hardtail, you effectively send a courier to Dave, pay Dave money for that hardtail.
I literally go here, Dave, 10 grand's worth of stuff, please. Stuff the van high, drive it all back to the unit, put it all into my stock, and then process that in batches.
Right.
You see, and then customers can still email in and organise a specific product if they want a specific product, you know, certain colourway with a certain decal style, a certain little personal badge on the frame, or so on. We can still do that sort of stuff. But rather than having all those drop downs on the website, it became very confusing for people, and we ended up having to deal with quite a few emails anyway. So it just seems nicer and more. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing the emails. So, you know, although I don't get as much, obviously it takes a reasonable proportion of time to do them, and I'd like maybe to get a bit more time to do other bits and bobs. But principally, if I get up nice and early, if I get up at like 5:30 in the morning and then do emails from 6:30 till, you know, till 9, then they're done, aren't they? You know, I don't have to touch them again until 3 till 5 or something like that. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's just working it like that, really. I don't know why I'm going on about that. Yeah.
Well, so getting up at 5:30 sounds completely unreasonable to me, but okay. So are there any models that you had on the Stanton's site before that now aren't available?
Only FSs at the moment, only because we need to get all the linkage, like all the all the little axles and all those sorts of things sorted out. All the small turn parts, and sometimes, relative to who's got space on the machines, they can take quite a long time to get sorted out. So I'm just getting some quotes and some lead times for those parts. But principally, that will all be back on again. I probably won't bother with aluminium rear ends going forward. Look to only just do carbon, because it's just more it's just more time efficient. The aluminium rear end, it's paint that causes the drama for the alu rear ends. We don't know why, but it's just after they've been heat treated at Wallwork, they're dipped in a cooling oil, and it takes ages sometimes to run all of that out, even if you've opened the bleed hole, you know, the breather hole quite a bit.
Right.
Still you're still having to bake it to drip it all out, and so it's just too much of a laborious process. So yeah, carbon rear ends, I think, on those going forward, just like the titanium versions. Yeah.
So really then, you've got more emails to do, you've got fewer staff, but from a customer's perspective, not an awful lot has changed, other than, I don't know, maybe the emails have more spelling mistakes in them.
Yeah, that's true. That's likely.
It depends how good the people were.
I don't know. Yeah, that's likely. Yeah, not the best speller in the world, but I give it me all, you know. it feels far more connected. Seeing people's builds as well, when they send pictures of the builds in, you know, it's like, yeah, nice, that's a tidy looking bike, thank you. I enjoy that touch time, yeah.
Well, so I think that then takes us from the last time we met to now, and gives people a bit of an idea of what's coming in the future. It is kind of vague, but I think people listening are probably glad that you're still here. If all the messages on the forum and everything were anything to go by, people want you to succeed and want Stanton Bicycles to continue. So, hopefully you've found a way through it all.
The first few months have been really, really great. The amount of love and support I've had via email has been, it's been a real uplift. I've, you know, come home and sharing with my wife, this guy said this, and, you know, it's just it has been a nice uplift. And, people definitely got behind us, you know. We've done we've done good sales, you know. There's only me, Lara and Matt, the other painter, and then the social media guys, Joe, who's done every single video since day dot, and Dave Bradbury, who puts the kind of marketing campaigns together for us. We're all still working together. Those two guys are independent anyway, and so worked on a per piece work anyway. But Matt and Lara, they're both full time employed again. You know, so it's the three of us rocking around in the building, and I'm doing all the business administration and customer sales, you know? And then obviously direction of marketing and so on. Yes, it's manageable. And it's enjoyable, you know, so happy enough.
And that's about what anyone can hope for from a job, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
If you can sleep at night, preferably not get up at 5:30 in the morning.
I don't mind that,
Yeah.
5:30 is a good time. It's a nice time, 5:30 in the morning. Fresh coffee, nice time to wake up. Yeah. You're not convinced.
I'll tell you word for it.
Oh, dear.
Maybe I should go to bed earlier. Well, okay. Well, yeah, I think last time we talked, you were looking at a different means of delivering bikes in the UK and in the bike industry. And that's kind of where we are now. It's another different.
Yeah.
So it's the same but different.
Same, but different, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, thank you very much for coming and talking to us today, Dan. And all the best with your new Same But Different.
Thank you kindly. Appreciate it.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.